Good morning. I'm going to call this meeting of the State Government Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, February 11th. We're going to start off kind of light and fun as we wait for some of our members to straggle in. So I'm going to ask folks to introduce themselves, give us a little bit about yourself and your district, but I'm also going to ask you to tell us something about your district that unless you lived there, nobody would likely know. And for we're going to start off with our staff and pages as well. So you can tell us something about your time here at the Capitol that you find interesting or fun. So let's start off, if we could, with Mr. Brill at the end of the table, and we'll work this way, and then we'll also hit our nonpartisan staff as well. So introduce yourself and what you do, and tell us something fun about where you live.
My name is Justin Brill. I am the GOP researcher. Was it something fun about where I live or something fun about working here at the Capitol?
Your choice.
I will say something fun about working here at the Capitol is getting to grow close friendships with staff and members with all the time we spend here.
Good morning. Hi, everybody. My name is Paul Anderson. I serve a district, live about 150 miles northwest of here. And I know there's more turkeys in my district and probably more dairy cattle as well. So it's a strong agricultural area of west central Minnesota.
Good morning. State Representative John Kosnick from Lakeville. I've never served on any local elected positions, but I'm on this committee and I'm happy to be here.
Good morning, Rep. Joy, out of 4B, Clay County, Becker County. Fun fact about my district is if you buy Lefse from Lunds and Byerly's, it comes out of my district, out of my town, Holly, from Carl's Lefse. Okay.
Good morning, everybody. Representative Tom Sexton from 19B, which is Steele County and Waseca County. So I live in Waseca, but over in Steele County, we have the largest free fair in the state of Minnesota.
Hi, I'm Dwayne Quam, Dodge and Olmsted County. I think you've probably heard of that little medical place down in Rochester. So the only odd thing about the area is in my zip code, there are four Dwayne Quams.
That's a lot of Dwayne Quam.
Now that is interesting. My name is Ben Davis. I'm the representative of District 6A. Just a couple things interesting about the district I serve in. I found out this morning that Representative Ginny Cleavorn has friends that live or visit or have a cabin in the Cross Lake area, and they love it. I live just south of Cross Lake. Absolutely beautiful. Crosby Ironton, the old Cuyuna Range, now has mountain bike trails that they've turned those mine pits into, and it gets about 300,000 visitors every summer. Projected. And then up in Grand Rapids, I also serve there. That is where Judy Garland's from. So there you have it.
My name is Jacob Grunhauser. I am the GOP committee administrator for StakeOff. I've been with the House for 5 years now, and I'm born and raised in the East Metro. If you're ever driving westbound on 94, that was where my family's tavern was at one point in time, which is now far underneath the pavement. But anyways, fun fact when you're driving on 94 westbound.
I'm Chair Jim Nash. I am in my sixth term from District 48A. One of the interesting things about something in my district is there is an island in the middle of Lake Waconia called Coney Island, and Coney Island used to be a famous getaway for visitors from all over the upper Midwest. Al Capone once hung out there, but another interesting thing is that the Minnesota Gopher football team used to practice on Coney Island back in the early 1900s, so it was kind of a fun little place to go. And now it has been turned into a park where you can take a boat across from a launch over to Coney Island, and you can walk around and have a good time.
My name is Allie Winter. I'm the CLA for this committee. I've been with the House for 3.5 years, and a fun fact about me is that I am also Representative Nash's constituent, along with his CLA.
Allie, I think that officially makes you Jim's boss. Just saying. Sorry. I'm State Representative Jenny Cleborn, and I'm the DFL lead for this committee. Fun fact about my district is I represent one of the largest cities in the state, and I also represent one of the smallest cities in our state. So I represent Plymouth and Medicine Lake.
I'm Amanda Rudolph. I'm the DFL CA, and I am from 41A. And in my neighborhood, the Korean, me, I am known for the one to make lefse.
Hi, I'm Katie Jones. I represent 61A, which is downtown and southwestern Minneapolis. And something about my district is the original intro scene for the Mary Tyler Moore Show, if people remember that. That's basically all filmed in my district.
I'm Larry Kraft. I represent 46A St. Louis Park. Interesting thing, as far as I know, there are no Dwayne Quams in my district, but but no, really, the home of the Cone brothers were from St. Louis Park and Nordic Wares.
I am State Representative Kristen Bonner of Maple Grove. Fun fact, we are the second largest amount of retail in the entire state outside of the Mall of America in Maple Grove. We're also known as the restaurant capital of Minnesota, although our detractors might call us No Stove Maple Grove.
Good morning. I am Representative Mary Frances Clardy, and I represent Amber Grove, Sunfish Lake, Lilydale, Mendota Heights, and West St. Paul. A fun fact about my district is we're known for producing great wrestling teams.
Good morning. My name is Mike Howard, State Representative for 51A, which is all of the city of Richfield and a slice of South Minneapolis. A fun fact about the history of how Richfield got its name, it's from its fertile land, and it's, you know, back before we had a bunch of houses in Richfield, and to this day, it's why we claim to have the best drinking water in the state of Minnesota.
And we've got staff over here.
Good morning. My name is John Beeler. I've been with the House for 4 years now, staffing Elections GovOps, State Government Finance, and the Fraud Agency Oversight
Committee. Good afternoon. Morning. Sorry, y'all. Sam O'Neill, Committee of Legislative Assistance of the Committee. I used to be a choir kid, and one of the first things that I found out about here is there's a cappella group called the Fiscal Notes at the Capitol. If anyone knows who's that group, please let me know. I'm trying to figure out who they are.
I'm Mike Brook from Nonpartisan Home St. Paul, from Eugene, which at one time was the unknown capital of the U.S.
And then if we could have our pages stand up and introduce themselves.
Hey, I'm Michael Thomas. I didn't prepare for this.
I'm Harry. I'm from Orno, Minnesota. Excited to
hear. Perfect. Well, thank you, everybody. State Government Finance, while some people think is somewhat sedate, is a very good committee. We cover a lot of ground. For those watching, we do really get along well. Lead Cleborn and I have a very excellent working relationship and have for a number of years. Doesn't mean that we agree on everything. We rarely walk out singing Kumbaya together, but we have a very strong, cordial relationship. And I hope that as we do our work, for the next 2 years, that we can remember that we can disagree here on different policy issues, but at the end of the day, the state is looking to us to get some things done to address both the looming structural deficit, but also to do good things for the people who live in our district. So with that, you all have received the committee rules from Mr. Grunhauser. They are in large part what we have used in the past, Lead Cleburne, with some minor changes, but the rules are out. And punctuality is, I will speak for Lead Cleburne, we both appreciate punctuality very, very much. So first bill up today is my own bill, so we're going to slide the gavel over to the Vice Chair, Representative Davis, and I'm going to move up to the front. What's that?
All right, the bill we have before us is House File 3. Chair Nash, would you like to move your bill before the members?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move House File 3 to be before the committee with a referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Chair Nash moves that House File 3 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Chair Nash, you have the A6 Authors Amendment. Would you like to move the A6?
I would move the A6. It puts the bill in the shape that I would like in consultation with the Senate. That is coincidentally getting its hearing today over in the Senate as well, and it is language that has been worked on with Senator Rasmussen over there and Senator Seeberger over there. So that is the author's amendment.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Nay. Motion prevails. Now that your bill is before us, Chair Nash, please tell us about your bill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 3 is one of a series of bills that we're going to be working on to address the waste, fraud, and abuse problem that we've had here in the state of Minnesota. It is not trying to litigate anything or break anything apart that has happened. It is a package that was put together to make waste, fraud, and abuse less possible and less rampant in our state. We are not going to go through and look for witches to burn at the stake. That's not the intent. This is truly designed to provide the legislature more tools in their toolkit. Utilizing OLA recommendations that have been made, it's going to organize them in such a way that it will bring information in front of committees that do fund different groups that would get money and better inform those legislators. So pejoratively, it's been called fraud notes, and that's not going to, according to Mr. Grunhauser, ever going to be the name that I get to use. So I'm just going to use it this one last time, so that I can fulfill my desire to do that. But so the genesis of the bill was really dreamt up on the back of a fishing boat as I was out trolling for walleyes, and I might have had a cigar and maybe some brown liquid in a glass with me, but I kept thinking, how can we utilize OLA information? And we all respect the OLA, we all read the OLA reports. How can we utilize those as they make recommendations for improvements in internal controls? And for anybody who has been around here very long, you'll read an OLA report and you'll see the recommendations that they make at the end of the report. And if you read the executive summary, those are in there. So the goal is to say, if, let's say, the Department of Health and Human Services has had in the last X number of years, 5 years, there have been 20 recommendations that have been made. And the department or the agency has chosen to implement maybe 3 or 4 of them. The score would be a resultant mathematical equation of the numbers that have been recommended, the numbers that have been implemented, and that simply is there to inform the legislature as to the seriousness of the agency or department that as they address the internal controls. And for anybody who's ever worked in the private sector, you know that when you get audited and the auditors come in and they say, you should be doing these internal controls, which ultimately is trying to make the organization a better run organization, a better transparency organization, and make sure that you are using the money that you have available to you wisely. Implementing those recommendations is critical. So if an agency were to only implement 3 or 4 of 20 recommendations, what that would tell the legislature is apparently we need to work and make sure that we are holding the agency more accountable to those internal controls. Because of a lack of internal control is what has led us to a number of the situations that we've been looking at. And that is the bill in its genesis. It is designed not to look backwards, as I said, to litigate anything that's happened in the past, but to look forward as to how do we prevent events from repeating themselves. So the bill is really quite simple. The report would be submitted to the different chairs and committees, and it would go before them at ostensibly the beginning of the year. The OLA would be able to make a recommendation or a presentation on those the matrix, if you will. And that's not the Keanu Reeves movie. It's just a matrix of information. And the desire is to inform the members of the committee long before they even begin moving bills that will contain funding. So I do have some testifiers. The OLA, I saw, there she is, was very grateful to work with the OLA as we were preparing this bill. And it is modeled after some things that were done in the state of Colorado, where this is being done to a lesser extent. But we worked very hard as we developed this bill to make sure that it worked for Minnesota, that it worked for the legislators, and that it made sense if it were to become law. So with that, I'm glad to be joined by the OLA.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Judy Randall, legislative auditor. Thanks for your time today. I have included, or it should be in your packet, the current version of an update report that we put out this year that I think can maybe be an example of the type of report we would be producing on a more regular basis and more completely if this bill becomes law. We have done something like this every year in that we take our recommendations that we've made in prior reports, reach out to the agencies, and ask for information about the extent to which they have implemented the recommendations we've made. Given our limited resources, we are not able to independently confirm a lot of the information they provide to us, so some of it is self-attestation of whether they have implemented the recommendation or not. So I would thought it might be helpful to just maybe walk through a page or two of this report so you can get a sense of the information that we would be providing. Again, this is simply, at least the way Chair Nash and I have talked about it, it's a way to maybe remind you of some of the recommendations and reports we have issued in the past, give you an opportunity to see whether or not things have been implemented based on our independent confirmation of whether they've been implemented. And then it's really a platform then for you to have further discussion. It is not a shame tool, right? There are reasons why agencies don't implement our recommendations. And so I think it's really an opportunity for you all to look at those areas and have discussions with those agencies to discuss where maybe they didn't agree with us or where it was too hard or maybe to brainstorm a different approach. So what I would recommend, if you all have this in front of you, is to turn to page 25 of this report. As you'll see in this report, we looked at the last 3 years. This is just of our program evaluations and special reviews, so it's not our performance audits. But on page 25, and I'm choosing that deliberately because you can see that this is all the recommendations we've made to the legislature. And so you can see by report the recommendation we made and then whether or not it was implemented. And, of course, there are some that have not been implemented. And that's a reasonable outcome because you might not agree with it or it might be too difficult or you have other priorities. And so you know, I think just to think about that and then reflect on how you would apply that to an agency's information in the same way. I'll also, if you just flip through this, you can see that some of them say partially implemented and explain why. Some of them say partially implemented, but additional work needed to confirm. And what that's about is that OLA did not have the resources to actually go and confirm that the recommendation had been implemented. So the agency reported to us that they had implemented it, and let's say it was something like, you know, make sure that you always do the conflict of interest disclosures prior to awarding a grant. Well, a recommendation like that would require us to go in, do a file review, and independently confirm that that had been done. And we currently don't have the resources to do that. I think there is a fiscal note attached to this bill, and that would help us provide, that would help provide the resources so we could do that. Some of the ones that are marked as implemented are easy to confirm. You know, update this template. Okay, so they provided us a copy of the template. We said, yep, that's been updated. Or implement, develop a policy. Yep, we could see that. So that's kind of the different categories that we've come up with now. This is like a proof of concept, certainly open to conversations with everybody about what would be useful for you. That is ultimately the point. So I'm happy to answer any questions if that would be helpful.
I believe we have a public testifier as well, Rihanna Lee. Come on up and tell us your name and who you're with.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. My name is Rihanna Lee. I'm the Legislative and Coalitions Director for the Americans for Prosperity chapter here in Minnesota. We are the nation's premier grassroots organization. We are a community of millions of concerned citizens advocating for solutions based on proven principles to tackle the country's most critical challenges. I am here to happily and strongly express strong support for House File 3. This is a bill that ensures greater accountability and transparency in how public agencies manage the resources that are entrusted to them. This legislation reflects values that we all hold dear. We trust responsible stewardship and the belief that government exists to serve the people effectively and ethically. House File 3 tackles an issue that matters to every single Minnesotan, and that is making sure that government agencies follow through on important recommendations to improve their operations. We believe that this is an important piece of bringing accountability of these agencies not only back to the legislature, but to the Minnesotans who foot agency spending via their precious taxpayer dollars. This bill requires the OLA to provide an annual report to legislators, highlighting whether agencies are acting on recommendations related to improving financial practices, internal controls, and overall management. And this gives legislators a clear, timely opportunity to make decisions about funding and priorities in a public forum. Why does this matter? Because accountability is not just about identifying problems, it is about fixing them. And the people of Minnesota deserve to know that government is learning from their mistakes when they happen and taking steps to do better. This bill ensures that when recommendations are made, that agencies are either implementing them or explaining why they haven't, which may simply involve changes to the law that only the legislature can make. And by involving public hearings in this process, the bill also gives Minnesotans a voice in how their precious taxpayers are taxpayer dollars are managed. And I'd also like to say it's worth noting that House File 3 doesn't just ask questions, it offers solutions. And by requiring agency leaders to report on their progress, it creates a culture of openness and continuous improvement. And this not only benefits the public, but also the agencies themselves, helping them operate more effectively and earn the trust of people they deserve. And I'd like to note some might worry that this, you know, may pose an extra level of scrutiny, but, you know, it'll create extra work for agencies. But I think it's really important to note that this is not, as Representative Nash said, this is not a gotcha thing. This is an opportunity rather than a burden. Accountability is not about blame. It's about partnership. And when agencies and legislators work together to address challenges, everybody wins. Taxpayer dollars are used more effectively, government programs run more smoothly, and the public gains confidence in the institutions that serve them. At its heart, this legislation is about respect for the people of Minnesota, for the role of government, and for the trust placed in these public institutions. And it's about creating a government that learns, improves, and stays focused on serving the public good. So I respectfully urge you to support House File 3. We thank you very much for your time and attention to this issue, and we highly encourage its swift passage. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Very good. Are there any other folks from the public who would like to testify?
Mr. Chair, if I could, very briefly, there is a letter in everyone's packet from the Minnesota Council on Nonprofits, and I would direct everyone's attention to that. They are writing in support of House File 3, and I believe they actually are here in the room if they would like to join us at the testifier. She says no. Okay. But just wanted to point out that the Council on Nonprofits is saying that this is a very good thing to move forward with. And, Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, for those who have ever worked in the private sector and have suffered through Six Sigma, which can be both a very good thing and both a very annoying thing at the same time, I was senior VP of sales for a company, and there was an effort to implement Six Sigma, which is a process orientation to drive better results from within your organization. I have to think that this would make a very good Six Sigma project for somebody inside the legislature if we were seeking continuous improvement. So I tried very hard to walk away and let that never creep out of my mind again, but it would be a very good Six Sigma project because what it's trying to do is drive a greater adherence to process. And again, it's not an onerous thing. And let's just throw this out there. We're going to grant money to organizations moving down the road. That's just one of the things that the legislature does. And I think that, as the previous testifier just said, it is something that the people who send the money into the state through taxes, I think they have a justifiable concern with the way things have been going, and that this is a preventative step in the future to make sure that we're adding greater scrutiny to that process. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I would be, I believe there is an amendment that's being offered, but would be happy to move on to that.
There is. Representative Clardy has the A7 amendment. Would you like to move the A7 amendment, Representative Clardy?
So moved.
Thank you. Representative Clardy moves the A7 and to your amendment.
Thank you. The amendment's really simple. It's to add an appropriation to match the fiscal note.
Any discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
If I could. So thank you, Representative Clardy. You and I had a discussion as we were walking out to the garage. We stayed inside for most of it, but it was chilly on the outside. So my initial intent was to find the savings for this as we went through the committee process, but I appreciate your support of the effort, and the fiscal note is the fiscal note, and wanted to make sure that we all remember that we had a fiscal note, and I went to the trouble to make sure that we got that done. So I would accept this amendment because we will be able to find the savings down the road, and it's a general fund appropriation, but we'll be able to find the savings during the committee process over the next number of months. So I would accept the A7.
Okay. The clerk will voice vote. We're going to do a voice vote. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment prevails. Any further discussion, to the bill, any discussion on the actual bill now as amended? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I like what the testimony gave. It's a nice snapshot, but not focusing on blame, but accountability. The auditor has gone through, and we're talking a lot about procedures that should be done and recommendations, but there are existing procedures that often are not followed. And we need to, besides making sure that they take the recommendations, they actually implement them and have the people perform those. It's not just the legislative directives, but there are federal fund strings and policies and procedures that aren't being followed and haven't been being followed. And there have been clawbacks from the federal government. So I like this bill, but the rest of the story is they can have on paper policies and procedures. Following it is what's going to be the most effective. Thank you.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if Auditor Randall could come back to the podium. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here, Auditor Randall. I just noticed, you know, you directed us to page 25 of this report here. So I was just looking at that. At the bottom of that, there's a recommendation related to emergency ambulance services. It says that the legislature should retain primary service areas, but it should restructure how they are created, modified, and overseen. It's been a few years since I've been on the health committee, so, I mean, I assume that's a solid recommendation. I guess I'm just curious what expertise the staff in the legislative auditor's office has related to ambulance services. I mean, is there anybody there who's ever driven an ambulance? You know, this is a pretty specific policy recommendation.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Freiberg, for the question. So these are reports and recommendations that come out of our Program Evaluation Division. So they are a group of generalists, and no, they are not experts in EMS, nor are they experts in Commerce Fraud Bureau or Child Protection. What they are experts in is conducting policy research. All of our work is grounded in standards and criteria, whether those are criteria in federal law, state law, best practices, policies, things like that. For the emergency ambulance services report in particular, we did a pretty extensive national review looking at best practices and how other states are organized. We, of course, interview agency staff, stakeholders. We conduct surveys of the local ambulance units. We do site visits. So we collect data. And so it's OLA are, again, social science research experts and use those skills to develop the recommendations. But I think you raise an excellent point, which is our recommendations don't need to just be taken blindly, right, without thought and discussion. And that is why when we list things that aren't implemented, you know, as I think we've all said, it's not about pointing a finger or scolding anybody. It's about inviting some additional conversation about, well, why not, and is there a better approach? So that's my answer.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you. Just a quick follow-up. I mean, I appreciate that. That's fine. But this is basically a recommendation to the legislature on a specific policy action that the OLA believes we should take. I mean, to me, that's functionally identical to something a lobbyist would do. I mean, and that's fine. The bill itself is pretty anodyne. I'll see how the discussion goes on it before determining how I vote. But it does seem to kind of put a little more thumb on the scales in favor of the OLA. I mean, at least in the legislature, we do have, you know, we have people from a variety of professions. We have people who've worked in ambulance services on both sides of the aisle. That's kind of why I picked this one. It just seemed like relevant. So it's fine. I don't know. I just I do get a little worried when we're delegating a lot of, you know, a lot of policy decision. I mean, they're not the legislative body, as Auditor Randall said, but we're kind of putting the thumb on the scales in terms of giving great weight to the recommendations of people who may or may not have relevant expertise.
Chair Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Freiberg's comment, I would say that I have yet to ever hear him disagree with the OLA wildly, and I think that everyone here respects OLA. And the bill is not prescriptive. It doesn't say you're never going to get this funding unless you check every single box. This is an informative effort to say, hey, head of agency, here are recommendations that the office that everybody respects, and you have members on the OLA Commission, and they all support the work of the OLA, and I've never heard anybody say we should get rid of that organization because they do shoddy work, so I don't want to allow that to persist as a comment, but I think that it's incredibly important that we recognize that processes and procedures don't necessarily, they're not necessarily predicate on 100% expertise in a certain area. There are processes and procedures that make every business and every state agency better. And I don't know that having somebody who is a professional ambulance driver in OLA's department makes sense as it relates to understanding that processes and procedures could make a place better. So I certainly recognize your concern, but this is not saying to an agency head, you must do this or we'll never give you a dime. This is, hey, these recommendations are industry standards. They are best practices. They should be followed so that we don't see what we have seen for the last number of years, which is what we're trying to avoid. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kraft, did you have questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First off, I'm glad you're still up there, Ms. Randall. First question would be, can you repeat, do you think agencies should do all of your recommendations?
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Kraft. I think it depends on the recommendation. Mm-hmm. Some of them are, you know, agency, you need to follow the law. Yes, I do think agencies should follow those. You know, some of them, as the one Representative Freiberg pointed out, are more complex, especially on the program evaluation side. And those, I think, certainly deserve conversation, right? You know, agencies disagree with us. I think there are ways to disagree productively and invite additional conversation, and we're always open to that. But I will reiterate that every recommendation we make is based on standards. You know, the reports that we issue on our financial audit side, which are performance audits, are much more compliance control. Those are, I would say, more black and white. You know, here's a law, here's a policy, you need to follow it. Why didn't it work? Okay, we need better internal controls. I think those are much easier to do something like this with. The program evaluation sides, you know, there's best practices, there's national practices. Maybe those work in Mississippi, but they wouldn't work in Minnesota, right? And so, you know, these are more open for discussion. So that was a long answer, but I do think it depends on the nature of the recommendation.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate that answer. So the report here, my and by the way, I you know, really appreciate the work you all do. I've had some briefings with y'all, and it's been very helpful. So what I would say, though, about the report is you just described a kind of a classification of different types of recommendations, one that you think, you know what, got to do it, others, you know, maybe not, maybe there's some extenuating circumstances. As I look at this report, it's all lumped together. They're all together. And for, I don't know if you chose this or not, but the not implemented things jump off the page because of the color scheme you chose in orange, red. And that seems to say these are bad, right? And so I think the problem with, if you go down something down this path, the problem is what you measure is what you get. And so if you're driving, okay, you have to do all this, you don't want any orange on this report, and you just said there may be cases where, you know what, probably shouldn't do this. So I think this is, I'd be careful about this. And the other thing I want to say, and maybe Chair Nash, you brought up audits, right? And with audits, and actually Ms. Randall just also spoke about this, audits are very focused things on the financial statements of a company. And the folks that are doing the audits tend to be, you know, CPAs and very focused on that. And they're examining a set of things that should be similar across companies. So when an audit report comes out on a company, yeah, you got to do that. You just have to do it. But some of the things you're looking at are a little bit different than that. So I think, you know, I'm concerned about this, and I'm concerned about adding another level of bureaucracy to our government. Now, one thing I would say is, you know, I spent a lot of time in the private sector as well. And what I've learned about quality is, and what we're talking about here is having better quality in our government, right? You don't inspect quality in, right? You build it into the process. So my concern about this bill, Chair Nash, is that what we're going to is trying to inspect more quality in versus let's take the recommendations and let's figure out, delve into more detail. So I think your intentions are good here, but I don't think this is addressing the issue. I think you're trying to inspect more quality in versus dealing with the process issues itself.
Mr. Chair, before we go to you, I would just like to state that I actually really appreciate the color scheme, and I really appreciate these recommendations. There's an old ancient proverb that says, rebuke the wise, and they'll become wiser. Another translation of that says, criticize the wise, and they become wiser. So I really appreciate the recommendations and the color scheme. Chair Nash.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Kraft's comment, part of building quality into the overall process is also bringing information before the legislature, because we are part of the process. As we choose to make investments or disperse funds to people, we should be properly and well informed, as we are part of that process. We're not merely saying this agency did or did not do that. We are informing people, much like yourself, who are going to make a cast a vote to send money out to a place like ultimately Feeding Our Future. Had we been more informed as to some of the controls that were absent, that would have been something that could have been more preventable. That's the goal. I'm refreshed that you don't want to grow bureaucracy. That is a refreshing notion for me. But what I will say is that given the fact that the legislature is inextricably linked to the process of granting money to outside organizations, much like the Council of Nonprofits who support this bill, adding something into, as you call, the process makes sense. And I don't know if you ever lived through Six Sigma, but this would be something very much in line with doing a project like that to add efficiency, adherency, and information to the people who ultimately had to make decisions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kraft, one final comment.
Thank you,
comment.
Mr. Chair. And I would just point out that the legislature has the information already with the OLA reports. Thank you.
And to that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
In my 11 years of being here in this legislature, I have also recognized that chairs and rank and file members, this is not something that is typically at the tip of their tongues, and this is adding yet another process to ensure that they do. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jones.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Nash, for presenting this bill to us. Since I'm a first termer, I want to make sure I understand what's happening. And I've been, you know, reading all the reports and talking with my colleagues, and just want to, and I really appreciate the OLA director to bringing this example to us. So I just want to confirm, is the thrust of this bill to essentially bring a report like this to the legislature every year?
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Jones. It is to take the work of the OLA and to assemble it in such a manner that reports like that are made to the committees of jurisdiction for the different reports and agencies that those would have oversight on. I think that there was an amendment that was to be offered. I'm glad that it wasn't. But so for HHS, they have purview over many things. They would get a report that are for the agencies and groups that they would have oversight for. For the state government finance, that would be a report that would be generated that would come before us. For Ed or for other things, all of those would eventually be created and submitted to them so that they were better informed before they even started the legislative year, so that they could say, hey, before we send money out, here's a report that can help us be more informed as to, do we go with the large tranche of money that we wanted to, or are we going to play a little defense and say, maybe we should do less, or maybe we do none at all, because once again, adherency to law is always a good thing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jones.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Nash. I had one other follow-up to that.
especially given the discussion kind of on the nature of the recommendations that are coming out, you know, the ones that are laws being complied with versus the, hey, these are some best practices that are coming from other jurisdictions. And so I'm wondering, does anything in this bill preclude the OLA from kind of making a distinction of those recommendations?
Chair Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would never make a move to preclude the OLA from doing their job. Once again, this is an assemblage of information that they are already producing. And if I were to be so bold, I think that the OLA might say things to me that I wouldn't want to hear. So I would never preclude or presume to do such a thing.
Awesome. Just one follow-up. Thank you again for that. I just think given this discussion, if this bill does move forward, I think that could be a very valuable thing, is to create a distinction between those recommendations. Thank you.
Representative Cleaborn.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And this is to Ms. Randall, Auditor Randall. So, one, I appreciate the work that you do. And I appreciate the many, many conversations that you have had with me, and I'm sure that you've had with Chair Nash. Is it your standard practice now to talk to the chairs or the ranking members of the committee when you have a report about an agency where you have concerns?
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Cleaborn, thank you for the question. Our standard practice now is when we release a report, or in the week leading up to the release of a report, we offer briefings, so kind of informal private conversations, to the chair of the relevant committees, also the minority lead. And so we offer those in advance. And, you know, some members take us up on them and some members don't. And then we notify everybody that we've released the report. After that, we then have conversations upon request, but we don't actively reach out to folks.
Lead Cleaborn.
Thank you. And Auditor Randall, could you please tell me, do you have any legislative authority to force any agency to do any of the work that you recommend?
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Cleaborn. No, we have no enforcement authority.
Lee Cleaver.
And Auditor Randall, and please take all of these questions with the utmost respect. do you have, in your capacity as auditor, any authority to write legislation or to write policy for agencies?
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cleaver. No, we do not.
Lee Cleaver.
Thank you very much. And in our discussions, you and I have often said that I appreciate audits, and that audits are something that says, this is the law, this is the policy, we came in, this is what we saw, and then there is a column that maybe should just be entitled best industry practices. In our conversations, I have often said that I don't like the judgy language. I don't like the shoulds and the woulds and the coulds, right? Just give me the facts. So when you do these recommendations, when you talk to the agency leads, are they generally receptive to hear the comments that you provide to them?
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Cleaborn. When we speak with agency commissioners, I'm assuming you mean?
Yes.
Often, yes. Not always. Yeah. And to the point about shoulds and woulds and coulds, I will say that financial audits, so we do a couple different types of work, right? We audit the state's financial statements. That is very much like what Representative Kraft was talking about. I mean, those are the numbers. That's the most black and white of what we do. The next thing are our performance audits, which are internal control and compliance audits. And that's when we're looking at, internal controls that an agency has or a program has, and the extent to which the program or whatever is complying with the law. And those are also conducted by our financial auditors and CPAs, and that's a standard tool in the auditor's toolbox. Our program evaluations are where more of those shoulds and coulds come into play when you see those. And that is the nature of a program evaluation, where it's not as black and white. Sometimes it is. Sometimes there's compliance in it. But sometimes it's like, gosh, we really think, you know, this could be done more effectively if you did this. That's not a law, but it's us. We're like outside consultants coming in and looking at the way a program is working. We're not quite Six Sigma, but, you know, it's that idea. And, hey, as outsiders with this research knowledge and looking at best practices, we think this would work better, and you should. So agencies pretty much always agree with the performance, you know, control compliance. That's pretty obvious. And I would say that they agree, you know, a large percentage of the time, well over 50% on the shoulds and the coulds. And then there is, of course, you know, I don't know, 10 to 20% that maybe they disagree with. Long answer, sorry, but I think that context helps understand the processes.
Thank you.
Lead Cleaborn, anything else?
Yes, and to Chair Nash. Chair Nash, when I read the fiscal note and I looked at the requirements of the bill, I had a couple of concerns. One, if we as legislators are relying on the auditor to constantly prompt us to please have a look at this, are we not being neglectful in our own responsibility to stay on top of these things as chairs, and are maybe taking a more simplistic approach to say somebody else can be our eyes?
Chair Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Lead Cleaborn, no, that is not the intent at all. The intent is to utilize the expertise of the OLA, because I've yet to hear anybody say that they do bad work, to better inform us as we lead our committees forward. And I will hearken back to what could have been prevented during the granting of money for Feeding Our Future had we had a matrix much like will be created. If we could have said, well, there are some internal controls that are lacking here, we then will take the responsibility to legislatively create those before we distribute this money. Mm-hmm. I, and you know me very well, I do not shirk my responsibility to anybody, but I always seek to be better informed.
Yeah.
And for anybody who's ever read an OLA report and walked away and like, that's stupid, I'm not doing that, you're a bad legislator. Because the recommendations that are made inside of an OLA report are made to better inform the legislature, because we are the enforcement arm. As you heard, I think one of your members asked, are you effectively the audit police? Are you going to go and arrest people? That's not the goal. The goal is to better inform members and chairs as we move forward with policy and procedures that we create. This is just a more prescient tool that will be in front of legislators as we seek to make informed decisions.
Lee Cleaborn.
Thank you. And we are certainly not here to, we're not litigators for Feeding Our Future. And the OLA report was an after the fact, right? I'm more interested in the prevention in the first place. So for that, I think we can all agree that reports that come in before the fact are very, very helpful to us. And the best thing that we can do to protect resources is to know in advance. So to that part, Lead Nash, I appreciate the conversation that we're having about how do we get to that prevention piece. But I don't think that, so if you're talking about a five-year look back, okay, so much changes in 5 years. The recommendations that the OLA would have made in 2020 or 2021 may today be so outdated based on law change, based on technology change. I'm not sure that that's the best use of our resources this way. And then if you're going to take this further and you're going to do these audits, it can't be just sampling, right? Because you could miss the opportunity that would have prevented the fraud that you're trying to prevent. And I think every one of us in this room wants to get to zero fraud. But as we heard from the U.S. Attorney Lugar, you know, fraud is there every day, right? Criminals are circling every day. And these people who created this fraud were organized, greedy, arrogant criminals who are being prosecuted and sent to jail, which is awesome. But it would have been more awesome to have prevented it in the first place, and COVID just opened up that opportunity. Now, I just want to say, I think the intent of the legislation is admirable. And I think present company excluded, you and I look at these reports, we examine these reports, we follow up on these reports. So I don't think that my saying that a chair may become less interested in actually doing their own work applies to you or to me, or maybe even to Chair Robbins in the room. So I don't want to cast that dispersion on you. That's not my intent. But I think for this bill, if we want to do it right, it needs a larger, more appropriate fiscal note for the agencies to be able to follow up on those recommendations, to have the personnel that they need within their organizations to do the work, to stay on top of the work. And I think the OLA would need additional staffing to do it and to do it well. So at this moment, I'm not supportive of this bill in its current form, but I would be happy to work with you going forward to see how we could make it better.
Chair Nash, closing comments on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I do believe that there is a motion on our side as well.
Okay. Representative Howard.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to respond to Lead Cleavorn's comments before we move
Mr.
to
Chair.
Representative Howard. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the fiscal note as it relates to the needs of the OLA was actually driven by the OLA's assessment of the bill, so I'll let them be more cognizant of their needs than you and I. That was how they gave the requirements to the fiscal note. But my wife is an industrial engineer, and I was part of her drilling for her engineering training and her professional engineering tests, because I got to help proffer that. And one of the consistent things that was driven into me by helping her was by Professor Deming, and he is a well-known industrial engineer, and his idiom was process drives improvement. Lead Cleavorn, and process is what this is all about. Process on the front end will drive improvement. And if we layer more process for legislators before we begin going down the road of issuing money to different groups, that's going to drive improvement. And I think that had we had more process in the efforts leading up to Feeding Our Future or CCAP fraud or adult daycare fraud or daycare fraud that we've just recently found out about or any of those things, that would have possibly eliminated some. And again, I'm refreshed that some of you are anti-growing of a bureaucracy, because I've been here for the last 6 years and that's not been always the case. But what I'll say is that this is a process-oriented bill. It is not prescriptive. If you become chair and I'm no longer chair and I'm gone or whatever, this still lives on to say, here are some processes that you as legislators can avail yourselves of that will possibly eliminate the opportunity for fraud. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Chair Javis. And Chair Nash, just a quick question. It's a nice piggyback on your comments now. If I'm understanding your bill, would you say kind of the core goal here is to prevent fraud through a little greater oversight of state agencies? Is that fair?
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I think that we should all vote in favor of that.
Well, with that in mind, Chair Davis and Chair Nash, I would like to make a motion to re-refer this bill to the Fraud Prevention and State Agency Oversight Committee. We have Chair Robbins in the room, and Chair Robbins mentioned yesterday that she would like to hear bills in her committee. Chair Nash has said that the object of this bill is literally the name of that committee, Fraud Prevention and State Agency Oversight Policy. And so with that in mind, it makes sense for this bill to go there. So that's my motion.
Chair Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would urge members to vote no on that. Chair Robbins has seen this bill, did not ask for this to come into her committee, and we are going to refer it to Ways and Means.
Can you just reiterate your motion, please?
The motion would be to re-refer this bill to the Fraud Prevention and State Agency Oversight Policy Committee.
All those in favor of the...
Oh, sorry. Excuse me.
May we please have a roll call vote on this? Thank you.
Just a quick comment, if I could.
Representative Howard.
Chair Nash, and with Chair Roberts in the room. I guess I'm just a little unclear about, and maybe this is a question for Chair Robbins, but the purpose of the Fraud Prevention and State Agency Oversight Policy Committee, if a bill where this is literally the topic of the bill, Chair Nash just said the purpose of this bill is to prevent fraud through greater state oversight. And so if this kind of bill isn't going to that committee, it just begs the question, why do we have that committee? So I would encourage a yes vote.
Chair Nash?
I would urge members to vote no.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'm not supportive of referring this to any other committee. This is the State Government Finance and Policy Committee, and that is what this bill deals with. I hope that it does minimize future waste, fraud, or abuse within the state legislature, but the actual subject matter of the bill is within the operations of state government. I'm glad you're concerned about other fraud within the state, but the motion is not really necessary, just kind of wasteful in itself. So the proper and the correct place for this is to proceed forward to Ways and Means.
We will do a roll call vote on the motion to re-refer this to the Fraud Committee. Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Nash?
No.
Vice Chair Davis?
No.
Rep Anderson? Rep Bonner?
Yes.
Rep Clardy?
Yes.
Rep Freiberg?
Yes.
Rep Howard?
Yes.
Rep Jones?
Yes.
Rep Joy?
No.
Rep Kosnick? Rep Kraft?
Yes.
Rep Quam?
No.
Rep Sexton?
No.
There being 6 yeses and 8 nays, the motion does not prevail. I'm sorry, 7 no's. The motion does not prevail. Chair Nash, would you like to wrap up your comments on your bill here?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And before we proceed, I'll request a roll call on the bill. And Mr. Chair. So the goal of the bill, as stated, is that we are going to do our level best to prevent future fraud.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I need to cut you off briefly. We have another question from Representative Bonner. Go ahead.
Okay.
Representative Bonner.
Sorry, I raised my hand multiple times. So I just had a couple of quick questions.
Please make them very quick.
Certainly, I respect the job of the audit, the OLA's office, and I really appreciate that. And I just wanted to check in with you. So I'm an agilist at heart. I love a good retrospective. Love it. Absolutely. Fantastic. One of the things that I know when I'm working with my teams is that when we get a retrospective, we typically we look at the suggestions and we immediately start to go through those suggestions and decide, okay, what can we do right now? What might we need to hold off on because we need more information? Or what's just not something we can implement or that we can do, right? And we do that fairly quickly. And I know that here at the legislature, we often hear that folks will come forward and they will say, we constantly are getting these updates of bills with technical corrections or things like that. And many of them actually have to do with recommendations from the OLA, right? So we immediately try to implement those right out of the gate. And if I heard you correctly, what I heard you say is that roughly about 80 to 90% of the recommendations of the OLA do get implemented. And it sounds like they probably get implemented fairly quickly. And what you then said was that there was maybe 10 to 20% where they might not get implemented. And we already discussed earlier that the OLA is not making a distinction between which things are absolute must-haves, right? versus what are not. And I'm just guessing that most of the must-haves probably fall in that 80 to 90%, and those get implemented. So what we're saying here is that we're going to create some additional layers to go after that 10 to 20% that didn't get implemented, and specifically, there may be very good reasons why they didn't. And we didn't differentiate what those 10 to 20% are and whether they are things that might be nice to have or might be best practice, but they might not necessarily fit with the laws of our state. They might not necessarily fit with the way that agencies do their work or any of those things. My other concern is this. If we're talking about 5 years, and I don't know about your teams, and I can't speak to agencies, but in the teams that I've worked with over the years, 5 years is a really long time. And in that time frame, personnel changes, people change. So the folks who maybe originally evaluated those requirements and implemented the 80 to 90% right out of the gate, but didn't do the 10 to 20, whatever that may be, and I'm guessing it's probably closer to the 10, but in that case, it sounds to me like the folks who may have understood why we might not have implemented something might not be available to make those determinations or to be able to discuss that again 5 years later, and which would mean that we would be putting an excessive burden.
Representative Bonner, please get to your question, please.
So my question was, is that accurate that it's the 80% to 90% that is doing that? And specifically, if we have folks, if we wait 5 years, what is the likelihood that folks within the agencies are still going to have the knowledge and the ability to even address the questions we have here? And because I just don't see how that's likely to be the case with the amount of turnover in our agencies and things like that. Those folks are long gone. And further, the next question would be, how do we accommodate for the financial cost of having staff who's going to spend time trying to look back 5 years to figure out why we didn't implement something that maybe just wasn't a good idea?
Chair Nash.
But Mr. Chair, I'll let the auditor answer that question, and then we can go to
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Bonner. I believe that 80 to 90% was in response to Representative Cleavorn's question about the extent to which agency leadership agrees with our recommendations. It wasn't about whether or not they had been implemented. I don't have that number because we have not been able to do a holistic thing. So I don't know the percentage that has been implemented. So the focus on 10 to 20% were the ones where I think folks don't necessarily agree or fully agree. It wasn't that those weren't implemented. So I don't know, you know, the premise, the underlying premise, I can't confirm or not. The five-year look back, I don't think there's anything magic about. I'll defer to Chair Nash on that. Couple of other points I will make. This was the first year we have done this type of report based on how we saw other states doing it, completely open to what would be useful to you all. This is the point, is something useful to you. So I have no skin in the game on this format, just to be clear. The other thing is there are already in this some recommendations that are no longer applicable because they were to the Department of Human Services and that role has moved to CYF, Department of Children, Youth, and Families. And so what we have used for now is not applicable. And so if the laws have changed and the recommendation is no longer makes sense, you know, we're not going to look to see if people have implemented something that is no longer relevant. So my main thing I'd like to just impress upon you is OLA's role is to help the legislature with information and provide oversight. And so if this bill becomes law, I would love to meet with any and all of you about what could be useful and work towards that.
Chair Nash, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll renew my request for a roll call just for the record. I think all of us would recognize that fraud has been pernicious in our state, and we have seen, and I don't think anybody is standing up and applauding fraud. I don't think anybody is hiring lobbyists to come up here and protect the opportunity for fraud. This is a measure that is a bipartisan measure because Senator Seeberger is on this bill in the Senate. This is modeled partly after something that happened in the state of Colorado, which is a blue state. This is a message that you get to send to your constituents that you are going to take fraud seriously and try to prevent it in the future. This is something that we cannot run away from. And Representative Bonner said that sometimes we just can't pursue the nice-to-haves. That is really, in my opinion, an undefensible answer as it relates to the wasting of what is at least a published $500 million. And we want to make sure that we're preventing that in the future. So with that, Mr. Chair, we can move to the vote.
Excuse me, Ms. Lead Nash, or Chair Nash.
Lead Cleavorn, you've already made your recommendations.
Oh, no,
we're going to go
not.
To the vote here. The clerk will take the roll.
Lead Chair Nash, you know that
the clerk will take the roll.
I encourage a no vote.
Chair Nash.
Aye.
Vice Chair Davis.
Aye.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Clardy.
No.
Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Howard.
No.
Representative Jones.
No.
Representative Joy.
Yes.
Representative Kosnick.
Aye.
Representative Kraft.
No.
Representative Quam. No. Representative Sexton.
Yes.
There being seven yeses and six nays, the motion prevails. Thank you, Chair Nash.
All right, next on the agenda, we have House File 23, Representative Robbins. Representative Robbins, since you are not a member of the committee, I will move for House File 23 to become to be before the committee, and the recommendation is to send it to, where are we sending this to?
Labor.
Chair Robbins, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an A1 author's amendment.
To your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Can I move the amendment?
Yes.
Okay.
I will move the amendment before the committee on your behalf.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, members, the A1 just gets the bill in the shape that I would like to have it. This is clarifying a statutory definition for abuse, fraud, and waste. It currently exists in Minnesota Statute 127A.21 and was just adopted in the same companion bill in the Senate last week. With bipartisan support. So I hope we can just move the A1, and then I'm happy to talk more broadly about the bill.
Discussion to the A1. Lead Cleavorn.
Yeah, I would just like to let our team know, because we have some new members, that generally we allow the authors to get the bill put in the form that they'd like, so I would encourage a yes vote on the author's amendment.
Thank you, Lead Cleavorn. Seeing no other questions, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Chair Robbins, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for hearing this bill. Basically, the purpose of this bill is to expand protection for potential whistleblowers in the state of Minnesota. As you've all seen, the headlines for the last many weeks that were approaching or exceeding $610 million in fraud in different agencies. We have had multiple investigations on child care fraud, on sober homes, autism centers. I can't remember, honestly, the whole list I have back in my office. But this is a bipartisan effort to protect state employees. And as I will note, I checked because I earlier introduced this bill in the session and then had to reintroduce it. And it does have a Senate companion, even though it's not listed on the reviser's website. The Senate companion is SF-475, and it has bipartisan support in the Senate. Not only is it carried by Senator Matthews, but it is co-authored by Senators Hoffman, Marty, and Kupek. So I just want you to know that this is a bill to protect state employees, and that is the heart in which it
is being brought forward. And so I just wanted to clarify that. So currently, the whistleblower law has fairly robust protections for state employees, but it doesn't allow or provide explicit protection for when they are reporting on issues of waste, fraud, or abuse. So they can report on many other things, and it's protected, but that exact category, waste, fraud, or abuse, is not in current statute. So this amendment and this bill will just extend that protection to state employees who want to report information to us as legislators, the legislative auditor, or a constitutional officer such as the Attorney General in this category. I'm happy to stand for questions.
I believe, Chair Robbins, you have a testifier.
Yes, I had heard MAPE was coming, but I do not know if
Devin Bruce from
awesome.
MAPE.
Awesome. Thank you for coming.
Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Devin Bruce. I'm the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees, MAPE. We are a union of over 18,500 state employees across all boards, commissions, and departments. I first want to thank Representative Robbins for bringing this forward. It takes a far less punitive approach than what we've seen in other proposals, largely focusing on how to better protect employees who feel compelled to come forward with concerns about state programming, services, procedures that they provide to Minnesotans. House File 23 proposes to expand the certain public employees under the Minnesota Whistleblower Act protection for reporting of waste, fraud, and abuse in public programs. While it does expand some of the additional protections to public employees in these select instances, one of the things that we are really want to highlight is that it only covers state employees in the classified service and therefore creates additional tiering between unclassified and classified in state programs, as well as differences between state employees and other public employees in local municipalities, schools, et cetera. The employees in the classified service enjoy a much broader protection, in fact, that's currently under Section 6 of the in the Whistleblower Act. And so to simplify and rectify some of this disparity, we would recommend amending Section 6 to cover all public employees at all levels of government. This was done in the other body via voice amendment, and kind of rectifies the fact that there's a difference between unclassified and classified employees when particularly reporting these types of instances. The broad scope under Section 6 would capture, I think, what the author intends to already, but by amending this to cover all public employees, we can ensure that everybody feels protected. I would also like to thank the author for removing the references to gross mismanagement, as there's quite a fine line that employees must walk to avoid triggering other HR policies, such as insubordination or the state respectful workplace policy. Lastly, I want to flag just a couple things that are not in this bill that should be considered as we move forward to the other committees. First, the first pertains to what is being shared by the employee and to whom it's being shared and by what means. These are largely covered, but not exclusively, in Chapter 13 of the Minnesota Data Practices Act. For example, information contained within grants, grant applications, or contracts have various levels of classification within them and are not just on the type of information, but where it is in the approval process. The Whistleblower Act states that despite having protections for sharing certain information with certain actors, the rules and regulations on what is shared and by what means remains unaffected. So I would certainly hate that any public employee watching this or reading the bills or watching the media would think that they have additional protections for sharing information that may be classified private or non-public or might be proprietary and forced disclosure and therefore the repercussions to follow that. Lastly, I would also encourage expanding some of the protections for whistleblowers under Subdivision 2 of the Minnesota Whistleblower Act, which would make the identity of employees reporting under Sections 1 through 6, or in this case 1 through 7, private data. Currently, only 1 through 4 are covered when reporting to government bodies and law enforcement. Thank you so much, and appreciate and stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bruce. And I will say that as chair, I'm not really much for oral amendments on the fly. I think that Chair Robbins can do that on her next committee stop. I find that as we try to do that in haste, it tends to create mistakes. And I have the ultimate faith in Chair Robbins as she puts the detail in detailed, that she can get that done for us as this heads off to workforce and labor. So I appreciate your input and encourage you to work with her, but I'm not really going to entertain an oral motion today. So, members, questions? Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question for the bill author. Is fraud, waste, and abuse, and I may have a follow-up question too, they're quick though. Is fraud, waste, and abuse considered a crime under state law?
Chair Robbins.
I do not believe right now it is. It's just defined for purposes of reporting for the Office of Inspector General in Statute 127A.1. So it's for defining what can be reported, but I don't believe it's linked to a crime. There is a crime of fraud, but not a, but so there is a crime of that, but that would be charges brought against the person who committed the fraud, not the person reporting the fraud.
Representative Freiberg.
Okay. I'd be interested in more clarification on that because I was, just looking at the new definitions in your author's amendment, you know, fraud includes intentionally submitting false information to the department for purpose of obtaining greater compensation or benefit than what they're legally entitled to. To me, that sounds like it's a crime. So there is an existing, and I ask this because there's an existing statute, section 181.932. It's the statute immediately after the one referenced in the bill that provides whistleblower protection to a person who reports a violation, a suspected violation, or planned violation of any federal or state law or common law. I guess I was just curious kind of what the bill does that isn't already covered by this whistleblower protection in statute 181.932.
Chair Robbins.
Thank you, Chair. So my understanding is that this was necessary to clean up the language and align it better with Section 127A. And so the crime of fraud exists, but there's no protection for necessarily reporting it or for abuse or waste, which are different levels of mismanagement, but they've been outlined in the other section of statute, but not specifically in the whistleblower protection statute.
Other member questions? And I want to put you on notice we're going to be voting on this in the next 2 minutes.
There are two members' questions.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I had some questions actually for our testifier from MAPE. You had suggested...
Representative Bonner, please be brief. We do have 2 minutes before we get there.
You suggested that we had some issues around private data. Can you elaborate on that?
Mr. Bruce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Bonner. Yes, so under 16B97 subdivision 5, so for example, there are many instances in statute, but this one in particular talks about grant data as non-public, but it changes during the process in which it's being approved. So parts of it become public, other parts are non-public, and then even when the parts that do become public, there are certain aspects of the grant or contract that might be proprietary data or trade secrets and therefore can't be disclosed.
Representative Bonner, quickly.
Thank you. I would suggest that we probably need to have more conversation about how we address those issues. And there were a number of other things that it looks like were not addressed as well. I guess I just want to ask, Mr. Chair, what is the path for this bill?
To Representative Bonner, this is heading next stop is workforce and labor.
And will this bill be returning to our committee?
There is no need, as it will have already been heard here.
Well, I would recommend that perhaps this bill should be laid over for the moment, because I have real concerns that...
Representative Bonner, is that your motion?
It is my motion, because we've had a number of issues that were brought forward that have not been addressed.
Representative Bonner has made a motion to lay the bill on the table. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Nay. The bill, the amendment or the motion does not prevail. Lead Cleavorn.
Thank you very much. Chair Robbins, I appreciate the bill and the intent to protect workers. I think that's something we can all agree on. At this moment, I don't think that this bill is wholly ready for the reasons we just heard. But I'm curious, will this bill also be traveling to your committee after it goes to labor?
Chair Robbins.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Cleavorn. No, it won't. I really think the next step, labor, is where we can address some of the issues that were raised by MAPE, and I look forward to that conversation. I think there's a longer conversation that we need to be having about, as was indicated, about how classified data is reported and protected. And that is beyond the scope of this bill. The scope of this bill is simply to extend whistleblower protection to employees who want to inform on waste, fraud, and abuse, and then provide the same definitions in the whistleblower part of statute that exist in the IG part of statute, so that we're aligning statutes so that employees are not subject to differing conflicts in statute or things that may be not clear in statute. So I agree we are working on the classification issue and how broad to make it. I would say that's the best conversation to have in the Labor Committee, and they will, you know, be fully apprised of all of that. So I think that's the best next step.
One quick
question. Lee Cleavorn, quickly.
Thank you, Chair Robbins, for that explanation. Will this bill be traveling to judiciary if we're talking about data and data privacy as well?
Chair Robbins.
I do not believe so, because currently it's not impacting the Chapter 13 issues. I do think the Chapter 13 questions need to be looked at, but I think that would better travel in a separate bill.
Representative Howard, you had a very brief motion or a brief question?
Yeah, just a brief question, then I'm going to make the same motion. But Chair Robbins, you heard my motion on the last bill, and I've heard now from Lead Cleavorn that you don't think this bill needs to go to your committee. If bills like this that are dealing with fraud prevention and oversight aren't going to go to your committee, what kind of bills is your committee going to hear?
Chair Robbins, very briefly before we get to a vote.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So our committee is designed to be adjacent to the and support the work of the standing committees. And so we will hear bills if it's necessary for them to come to our committee, but the work of our committee is more about oversight. And so we will be continuing to have hearings like we did yesterday with the OLA. I think next up we're going to have the Office of Grants Management. So those broader hearings about the process of how grants are managed, how the agencies are functioning, that will be more the work of the fraud committee, and then the detailed work on bills that come from different jurisdictions. Committees all have these different jurisdictions, and everything that goes through standing committees doesn't need to come to the fraud committee. So I want to be working closely with the chairs of all the standing committees. I invite them to attend our committee hearings as well, but we want to keep these bills that are going to help improve state grant processing, improve whistleblower protection, and improve the functioning of the legislature so we don't have waste, fraud, and abuse, get moving through this process. So if I see the need for something, I'll be the first one to speak up. But right now I'm very comfortable with how these bills are being brought through committee process.
Chair Nash and Chair Robbins, thank you for that answer. I would just say if bills like this aren't going to go through your committee and it's a policy committee, it's still a little unclear to me the purpose there, but so I will still make the motion to refer the bill to the Fraud Prevention and State Oversight Policy.
And Howard moves that the bill be not referred to Workforce and Labor, but be referred to Waste, Fraud, and Abuse Committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. Representative Joy.
I would request a roll call for this.
Representative Joy requests a roll call on the bill. Representative Robbins, two-year bill summary.
Members, this is an important bipartisan bill that will provide additional whistleblower protection for state employees who need it, who honestly are coming out of the woodwork to report to me and our committee on things they have seen in agencies. We owe it to our hardworking state workers to provide this protection. Thank you.
Lead Cleavorn, quickly.
Thank you. And for that, members, I would say already state employees have an opportunity to report anonymously both to MMB and the OLA. This bill is not quite ready, so I will encourage our side of the team to vote no. Thank you.
Committee assistant will take the roll.
Chair Nash.
Aye.
Vice Chair Davis.
Aye.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Clardy.
No.
Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Howard.
No.
Representative Jones.
No.
Representative Joy.
Aye.
Representative Kosnick.
Aye.
Representative Kraft.
No.
Representative Quam. Representative Sexton.
Yes.
There being seven ayes and six nays, the bill is voted in favor and will be moving to Workforce, Labor, and Economic Development. Congratulations, Chair Robbins. Next on the agenda, we have House File 2. And members, just to let you know, we are going to try to get to a vote, or we're laying this over, so we will not be trying to get to a vote, but we are going to be done at 10 sharp. Representative Davis, would you like to move your bill before the committee?
I would like to move my bill. Excuse me, I'm choking on my water.
That sounds regrettable. Representative Davis, to your bill, we are laying this over, so there is no motion that you need to make further. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. It's my honor to present to you HF 2, a bill to prevent waste, fraud, and abuse of our taxpayer dollars and mandatory fraud reporting in state agencies. I'll be very brief since we're running short on time, but my district is sick and tired of their tax dollars being wasted on waste, fraud, and abuse, and that is exactly what is happening. We've discovered daycare fraud from 2017, and we're now finding out that there's 62 more investigations into that. Feeding our future scandal, we all know about $250 million in fraud. The child autism center scheme that's come out, treatment center fraud, provider overpayments fraud, and I can't help but think that there's going to be even more coming out, and the time to act was years ago. State government has been ignoring the pleas of the people for accountability, and that's what HF2 addresses. Section 1 of the bill, agencies must report fraud. Section 2 states that organizational charts must be posted online. Section 3 and 4 mandates unannounced in-person site visits that are required to verify grant recipients doing the work as claimed. Section 5 deals with mandatory reporting of violations and grant processes. Sections 6 through 9 deal with obligations of grantees. Section 10 deals with criminal charges and convictions. If there's a charge, that the grant will be paused. With that, Mr. Chair, that is a very brief explanation of my bill.
Yeah. Representative Davis, I believe you have an author's amendment coded A4. Would you like to move that?
I would like to move that, and it just brings the bill into the shape that I'd like it to be in.
Representative Davis moves the A4. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. I believe there are testifiers, or I think we'll call up Deputy Commissioner Christensen from Admin. And as you're making your way to the table, Deputy Commissioner, please recognize the need for alacrity and make it quick.
Chair Nash, we do have other amendments. Do you not want to get the bill in its total order before testimony?
We will take this testimony, and then we'll get to your amendments.
Thank you, Mr.
Please proceed. Introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Stacey Christensen, Deputy Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Administration. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on House File 2. You also have a letter from our commissioner in your packets outlining admin's comments.
The Office of Grants Management is a division within ADMIN that supports state agencies in effective grants administration by coordinating policies on grants administration and providing grant templates and training. It's important to highlight that grant decision-making authority is decentralized, which means that grants management and performance monitoring reside with state agencies and not centrally within OGM. My testimony today focuses on OGM's role and responsibilities in helping agencies protect against fraud. OGM has implemented structural and policy changes passed during the 2023 legislative session and revised and increased training. These changes overlap with several provisions in House File 2. ADMIN supports the following provisions. Section 3 directs the Department of Administration to create grant policies that prevent fraud, waste, and abuse. This policy framework are continually updated as needed or required. Section 4 requires agencies to withhold funds if a grantee does not submit a progress report. OGM policy aligns with this, but does allow state agency to provide a grantee a written extension. Section 9 requires additional information from grantees and enhanced oversight by state agencies for new grantees. While this is permissive in current law, this change is not substantively different from current practice. And Section 9 adds to current law that a grant agreement may be suspended for a criminal charge in addition to current law requiring termination of a grant in the case of a conviction. This aligns with current law that allows the Commissioner of Administration to terminate a grant for any action deemed not in the best interests of the state. However, there are certain provisions that are of concern and may cause significant hurdles for small entities or limit flexibility in unforeseen and extenuating circumstances. Section 1 requires notification of law enforcement and the legislature in cases of suspected fraud. Without additional clarification, this report...
Deputy Commissioner, please be brief.
This report to law enforcement may not be properly received. Section 411 requires agencies to conduct at least one in-person unannounced visit. While current policy recommends that in-person visits occur when possible, requiring unannounced visits poses a significant hurdle. Section 4 requires financial reconciliation of each grant project expenditure. We would recommend that state policy language be incorporated and would appreciate a discussion with the bill author and working on this language together. Section 4 provides criminal sanctions for specified violations. However, current law already addresses these penalties. Section 4 prohibits any exceptions, and we would recommend considering current policy that provides the Commissioner of Administration the ability to address those. And Section 12 makes modifications effective immediately. Given some of these changes are significant changes, state agencies will need some time to implement. I will wrap up and look forward to working with the bill author.
And members, I'm just going to, given the fact that we're going to be laying this over and we're not going to be sending this out, I'm going to let the testifiers that have driven all the way down here this morning to come and testify out of fairness to them. And you have my word, and I think it's good with Lead Cleburne, that we will get to your amendments, but we're going to go to testifiers so that you can hear from them since they've gone out of their way to be here today. Lead Cleburne.
Yes, I want to thank you for that. You and I have always said we would allow people from the outside to come and testify, but I just want to make sure that we have absolute assurance that this bill will not move at all without our amendments.
Well, Representative Cleburne, have I ever gone back on my word to you? I don't believe I have. Okay. Thank you. Representative Davis, you have some testifiers that you would like to call up.
Yeah, I have two testifiers, Dale Witherington.
And I believe Mr. Qualls, if both would like to move to the testifier tables for the sense of the sake of speed. Gentlemen, please introduce yourself to the committee for the record and proceed with your testimony. And then members, once again, in case there was any doubt, we will not be moving this bill out of committee. We are going to lay it over. And then when we bring it back up, we will deal with the amendments that the DFL has so copiously entered for consideration. Mr. Witherington, to your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Dale Witherington. I am the chief steward of Restore Minnesota, a statewide ministry that collaborates with other organizations around the state, mostly of just average Minnesotans, about 500,000 people throughout the state of Minnesota, and I am here to speak in favor of HF2. At a time when the majority of Americans made it clear in the November 2024 elections, it is time for Minnesota lawmakers to please join more fully in the fight against wasteful, fraudulent, and in some cases, often hidden illegal uses of taxpayers' money. Whether we like it or not, The Federal Department of Government Efficiency is revealing to Americans levels of economic incompetencies and illegalities that it makes us wonder how deep the rabbit hole goes in Minnesota. We are not oversensitive, and these are the people that I talk with around the state. We are not oversensitive when we say we are angry of the abuses allowed by the party in power during the 2023 and 2024 legislative session, in which an $18 billion surplus of taxpayer money was so mishandled that legislators felt necessary to raise the budget in Minnesota by nearly 40%, increase our taxes by 10%, while losing $550 million per year of revenue from productive Minnesotans in such a manner that it will require additional tax increases from fewer productive people to make up for the nearly $5.1 billion shortfall projected for the next biennium. The result nationwide is that our governor, the leader of the party in power during the mess of 2023 and 24, ranked 50th out of 50, dead last, in handling a state's economy. All this while several hundreds of millions of our hard-earned money has flown out of our country to help fund what? Our money is not your money. You are stewards over that which we have asked you to lead, not to misuse or allow to be stolen. Please support HF2 as a beginning to cleaning up the financial mess Minnesota is in and preventing more of that from happening. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Witherington. Mr. Qualls, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are going to be done
in 5 minutes.
Oh, less than that. I'll be brief. My name is Kendall Qualls, Medina, Minnesota, private citizen, and I think I speak on a large percentage of Minnesotans in our state. You know, the average salary in the state of Minnesota is $67,000. People working hard to earn a living in the state. And the idea that over half a billion dollars have been wasted publicly, disclosed, wasted in fraud, that's what we know of. And there's not been one bill addressed to handle fraud and abuse when the DFL was in the majority. And the fact that we're throwing rocks and stones on amendments or bills that are trying to move forward to address this issue. Instead of a sense of urgency, as I listened in earlier, instead of a sense of urgency on this issue, that you may think a partisan issue, most Minnesotans' average salary, remember, that's the average, $67,000 a year, and they see no sense of urgency coming out of the legislature on this issue. Only partisanship votes. It's disappointing. And if anything, I think what would give Minnesotans a sense of reassurance that we're all in this together, it sees some type of bipartisanship from the other side of the aisle. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Qualls. And members, once again, we are going to lay this bill over. So, Representative Davis, you'll have an opportunity to make your conclusions then, because we're going to dispense with the amendments. I know that Ms. Raton is here. We will have her back at another time. It'll be great, I'm sure, when we all come back to talk through this bill. But members, we are going to do our level best to get out of committee on time every single day. And while you may feel rushed at times, we are going to be done at 10 every single day, or we'll book the room for some time in the evening. So when we reconvene, we will be dealing with your bill at an appropriate time. But until then, members, the bill is laid over, and we are adjourned.